Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we'll be talking about role-playing games and what we like about them from the perspective of a game master, a seasoned player, and a new player. But first, let's get off topic for some news, announcements, and feedback.
Yeah, so this week our announcement, my big announcement is, I guess it's not new, but we're getting close. I'm going to GameholeCon next month.
Yeah.
First weekend, that should be the 4th, 5th, and 6th. Okay. Friday afternoon, I'm going to be DMing a game using Savage Worlds. We're using the fantasy version of Savage Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Right, very popular.
So I'll be making characters. Anybody can come and sit down and play. Anybody up to 6 players, but...
Right.
I've snuck a few other extra players in there, so we'll see how it goes.
But is there anything else we should... Because I don't know much about GameholeCon. You know, what else should we know?
That's a great question.
That's a pretty good one. Thanks, man.
So GameholeCon is probably... From what I follow a few different conventions. Not all of them. There's a ton of conventions out there. Obviously, I go to the big ones, Gen Con, Origins.
Right.
But GameholeCon is in Madison, Wisconsin. It's later in the season, so it's in November, which is on the very tail end of con season.
Right.
But this is their 5th one, and they're all the people that know that have been there just want to keep going back. It sounds like a great convention. I'm really looking forward to it. It's only a couple hour drive for me, and I'm still, like I said, trying to rope you guys into going as well. I just gotta kidnap you the day of, knock you out, put you in the car.
It's happened to me before.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it.
Twice, I think, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So they're mostly, I mean, it's a gaming convention. No video games, obviously. Well, again, not obviously, but video games, but role-playing games, board games. I'm going to GM Savage Worlds, role-playing games, but I'm going to keep an eye on all the board game stuff too. Mm. One of the things that's really looks cool about this convention, though, is the number of special guests to normal guest ratio is crazy. Mm-hmm. So I'll be playing a game with Jeremy Crawford. He is one of the designers and developers of 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons, along with 4th edition and maybe even 3rd edition.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I'm going to be playing a game where Ed Greenwood's going to be the dungeon master. Mm-hmm. Ed Greenwood is the creator of the Forgotten Realms, which is kind of the default setting for 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons, but it's been around since 1st edition Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. So it has literal decades of history to it, and he does a lot of writing for that realms. I'm really looking forward to playing in the Forgotten Realms with the creator of the Forgotten Realms.
That's pretty epic.
So
pretty cool.
Yep. Now on the more tabletop game side, Andy Looney is going to be there, and he does a lot of Looney Labs games. These are more casual games Flux or, just there's a number of things that are a little more casual, but one of his more hardcore games, I've talked about it before, Homeworld.
Yes.
He really likes to play, and I plan on challenging him on that. So we'll see. I'll let you know.
It's a strong skill-based game, much like chess. So if you win, it will mean a lot.
Yes, exactly. It'll be beating the creator of the game. So strictly speaking, he's not the creator. He didn't design it, but he designed the pyramids it's used for, and it's one of his favorite games.
Yeah.
So, I'll probably talk about that a few more times before it actually happens. And if I get all of you guys up there, all of you, both of you, maybe we'll do a live recording from GameholeCon for that
maybe.
Week. So, that's pretty much the main announcement. Again, I'll bring that up as we get closer. Sure. We do have a little bit of feedback.
Yeah.
So this is word of mouth feedback. A coworker of mine who listens to the show, Becky, she's listened to, I think this was when we were talking types of games. Mm-hmm. Or it might have been fun. Whatever the case was, she mentioned that kept talking about deck building games.
Right.
And how people don't often know different terminology. Like, what are we talking about when we say deck builder game? And she's like, but you never actually explained what it was either.
Oh no.
I can't believe we didn't
Becky.
Do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, everyone as well. Yeah. Oh man.
Sorry, all 2 dozen of our listeners.
I know.
Or well, two.
They and, matter to
yeah,
us.
Yeah, the rest are just
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You all matter to us. Which was especially embarrassing because we were talking about a deck building game.
Right.
like right after that. It was did not explain the mechanic. So I'm going to real quickly, Josh, why don't you explain what a deck building game is?
Ooh, this is going to be interesting because I've only played deck building games for a couple of weeks, but here'll go my sort of overview. So the idea is that you have a pool of cards. You know, you start with a few cards, you know, which makes up your deck. You draw some cards from that deck that you have. And then you have a pool of cards that are kind of communal. And on your turn, you can hopefully use some sort of purchasing power with the cards you have to buy more cards. And as you go along, you're acquiring more cards that do more cool things based on the rules in the game, and you get more and more powerful with those cards. And the deck keeps shuffling into itself, and you're having to draw from that same deck again as it builds higher and higher. And so you're basically trying to put together the best deck. I think that's how I understand it.
Perfect. Yeah. And the distinction between it and Magic, or Pokemon or some other collectible card game is in those games, you build a deck before you play the game. In a deck building game, you're building a deck as you play the game.
Right.
So minor distinction, but a pretty significant one.
Also, all of the cards are included in the game. You don't have to buy special. You can, some of them, I'm sure, but, most of them, it's just there's the base deck that it comes with, and you are buying it with money like from the game. You don't have to spend actual money on it after the initial purchase.
Yeah, I've not yet seen a collectible deck building game. However, now that I've said it, it seems like
it exists somewhere now.
Yeah.
It's out there.
It could be a huge moneymaker. We should quit our day jobs and invest solely in this concept.
Right. Okay. It's a bit scary, but maybe.
I'm just saying. Another thing we mentioned a lot was the term legacy. And I'm going to defer that to our game of today because that directly replies. But I do want to kind of define what a legacy game is because we say it casually like everyone should understand.
Yeah, this time we will not forget to explain.
Exactly. But first, let's talk about me a little bit.
Oh, sure.
All right. So, well, me and new games. Twilight Imperium 3 showed up this week.
Ooh.
Really big box. Lots of cool plastic miniatures in there. Done old school style. I was, you know, remember those plastic sheets of...
Oh, like, you have to like twist them out.
You have to twist them out.
Oh, man.
So there was a lot of bloody fingers as I'm like nicking myself.
Did you break anyone's arm off?
I did not.
Good.
I have a really sharp paring knife that I was using like as an X-Acto knife to get... Yeah, so...
You gotta take some fingers off, dude.
I was being
careful.
Very
I'm really
careful.
Glad I didn't witness that. That made me so nervous.
It was not an exciting... Yeah, I was like, I'm not watching TV while I do this one. Right. So, but it looks fun. It's a six-player game. It's recommended for six players. Mm-hmm. It certainly has three-player rules. So I'm going to try to get six people to play it.
Okay. Let me just, you know, mention the elephant in the room. How long is this game going to take, Chris?
So...
Because I've heard things about TI, whatever number.
Yeah. So I expect on the box, I believe it says somewhere between like 3 to 4 hours. But especially when you have a group of six people who've never played a game before, I'm expecting
a few hours.
Yeah, I'm expecting
to even just get it set up and learn the rules.
Yeah, I'm expecting 6 to 8 hours.
Yeah.
I watched a YouTube video on how to play it. It's like how to play Twilight Imperium in 32 minutes. So 32 minutes of just explaining the rules.
Wow.
It seems like once you get the hang of it, it's not that bad. Like most games, it's pretty straightforward. But getting the hang of it, understanding all the strategies to it. Mm-hmm. And then the person who did this YouTube video, he's like, and at the end, he's like, well, if you're still a little confused, that's fine. You might have to play 2 or 3 games before you really understand it. Like, that's a hell of a commitment.
A lot of sunk time there.
Yeah. So we're going to try it. We're going to see.
Right. Might be one that's worth giving homework for, you know, like, hey, watch this video before we play.
Yep. So everyone around. So I have Sydney. She's like, she'll play. You two, I'm going to rope you into.
Sure.
So if we can find two more, maybe Spencer and Gloria, which would be a very interesting thing.
I mean, it's a challenge, guys.
Yeah. So keeping.
I'll let you try to talk Spencer into it.
This is me and Kitty's other halves. So just in case anyone was wondering,
yeah,
they're more casual gamer type people.
Yep, Sydney is mine, Gloria is Josh's, Spencer is Kitty's. So
we collect them like Pokemon. Yeah,
exactly.
We do,
and we battle them.
Yes, we need to do that. That sounds amazing.
Let's see. I have not ordered any games this week, but I did kickstart a few of them.
What?
I know.
Sorry, I was taking a sip of tea.
Oh my god!
I almost did a spit take there, though.
So it was just, it was like the cutoff of, I had ordered TI3 Descent last time.
Right.
So it was like really close. So I didn't order anything new this time. I did kickstart Stellar Armada, mostly because it's like a $1 game.
Ooh.
So I'm like, all right. And then I spent $10 because I had to get the deluxe version.
Of
and
course.
The four player double variant
sure.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also watching a game called Endangered Orphans. Which
that sounds PC.
It is absolutely an anti-PC game. Your goal is to be the last orphan that lives.
Wow.
So the game is really about killing off.
It sounds worse than Secret Hitler.
It is pretty bad, but yeah, Endangered Orphans. Check it out on Kickstarter.
I kind of still want to play, but hilarious.
I'm so very tempted to pull the trigger on it. I'm just like, all right, I want to watch where it goes. I want to see how it funded in like 25 minutes or something crazy like that. But so anyway, more games to come. We have to. We're gonna have to dedicate probably 2 or 3 days a week of playing games now. Just.
Okay. This really is becoming a job.
Yeah. And don't worry, I will double your pay.
Right. Oh, so great. Double the amounts of chips and salsa.
Exactly.
Yeah. Zero.
Yeah.
You get all the LaCroix you can drink.
Sweet.
Yes. So, game of today. We actually played two of them. Josh and I played The Duke, which is not the newest game in the world, but it's a two-player game, kind of like chess.
Yep.
With a little bit of a randomness to it, because you only start with three pieces on the board. You start with your duke, which is kind of like your king, and two spearmen or footmen, which are your pawns. And then when you put new pieces on the board, you have to draw them from a bag, and then you can place them next to your duke. Each piece is like this wooden square, and on the square itself shows you what the movement is, what the attack is, what you can do with it. But as soon as you move the piece, it flips over and has different movement and attack rules that then take into
effect. So it could be pretty terrible on the front side, but then he flips over and he's a badass ninja and you're like, oh my god, he's going to be running around all over the board.
Exactly. Except for the next time he moves, now he's pretty terrible again.
Yep.
So, so
that was a fun one. Yeah. I enjoyed that. Like, it felt a bit, I liked the random element to it versus chess. It didn't feel as hardcore in that sense. I felt like I could get lucky on a few turns and kind of, you know, catch up to you.
Yep. Well, Kitty came in at the end of our second game and just kind of was watching. What was your impressions from afar? Did it look interesting to you? Or are you like, those are wooden pieces on a board?
So, confession time, I am super sick right now. Chris is going to wipe everything I touch with Lysol as soon as I leave this apartment. So, I wasn't focusing.
All right. So, fair enough. It was an uninteresting game is what I'm gathering from that.
From afar. Yes. I played it. I enjoyed it.
It was hard to see the symbols on the pieces from not sitting at the board.
Yeah.
That's true.
I think it's one of those things where when you're playing chess and someone, if you look onto it, all the pieces look very distinct and different.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of get an idea, oh, that's a bigger piece or that's a cooler looking piece or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This one, everything's just kind of almost like a 1-inch by 1-inch square piece of wood.
Yeah.
And unless you're following what's going on and really looking at all of this stuff, I don't think it's easy to follow from afar.
No.
Like, you really can't view this game.
Especially from within a deep Benadryl fog.
Exactly. it is a Benadryl-free game.
Non-drowsy only.
Yeah.
Or if you're really awesome, that could be your handicap.
That's true. And Josh beat me twice.
Yes.
The first time, I might have had a way out, but I still call it a fair win.
Sure.
And the second time, actually, both times were accidental.
Yeah, I mean, I was making good moves. You know, I had to get myself in that position in the first place. But sure.
Mm-hmm. But that was a good game. We're going to have to play a few more of those to kind of, once you start knowing the pieces, I think it becomes a little bit faster and more interesting.
Mm.
So, and then we played once Kitty was here and all hopped up on Benadryl and feeling good.
Yeah.
We broke out our first of our legacy board games that we got last week. And played a couple games of Risk Legacy.
So, to address our listener feedback, Legacy.
Legacy.
That means that every time you play, you permanently alter the board. It is not the same game the next time you play. And they usually have a lifespan. So Risk Legacy has 15 plays.
Yep. Well, and Risk Legacy, 15 plays, and then basically you're considered done. Mm-hmm. And then there are optional rules for continuing to play, but it's not the same level of change.
And you really mean permanent, right?
Oh, yeah. We are writing on this markers with Sharpies. Oh, man. This is going to be a long episode.
Stickers were going on the board. Like, those stickers aren't coming
ripping
off.
Up cards. Yeah. Yep. It is. These are real changes.
Felt wrong sometimes, but kind of cool.
It's like you have to just commit to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, oh no, I'm going to treat everything. I'm going to save everything. No, just commit to it.
Yep.
You know, 15 games of Risk. I'm assuming most people have heard of Risk at least.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the monopoly of area control games. So you have the world, and there's split into different sections, and you're attempting to conquer the world. Mm-hmm. It has a tendency to take a very long time in its original form. They do give you shorter victory conditions in this one. You can still win by taking over the world.
Which I didn't like.
Yeah. So Kitty wants to play like 7 hours per game.
Sure.
That is what Risk is.
That is what Risk is.
This is Risk Legacy. Yeah.
We could do an entire show on what Risk is these days. Because it's like a brand now. Like right, yeah. Most Risk games that come out right now aren't anywhere similar to what Classic Risk was. But yeah, we're going to continue to play this. We'll see if we can get through 15 games because I also want to play Pandemic Legacy. And then by then we should have Seafall, and then we'll do an entire episode on just the Legacy games because they're all designed by the same person.
So. Right.
All right. Well, that's about 17 minutes into the show. Calling out time. And...
in this episode, we're talking about role-playing games. I'm fairly new to role-playing games. Kitty has been playing for a couple of years now. And Chris has been game mastering for a few decades. Today, we'll talk about why each of us likes role-playing games and when we'd rather play a role-playing game instead of a board game.
Yeah. So just to kind of give a background of what we've been doing, I figured we'd just start out with describing our history. So I'll start first, then we'll go to Kitty. And then we'll end with a brief segment from Josh. Let's see. I think my first play of a role-playing game was in middle school. I heard about this thing called Dungeons & Dragons, and I thought this was like an interesting idea. I seeked out a less popular person, let's say, in middle school. I found a nerd who... I figured, oh, you must play Dungeons & Dragons. So I asked him about it. And he's like, yeah. So went over to his place. He had all these, you know, at that time it was first edition Dungeons & Dragons books. So Advanced Dungeons & Dragons. We ended up becoming really good friends over the next few years. And my first play experience with Dungeons & Dragons, I was really excited. I went to the hobby store. We went in the basement of the hobby store because that's where you played Dungeons & Dragons. I rolled up a thief. I had 4 hit points. I walk into a dungeon, I go into the first room, open the door, get my head cut off with a guillotine, and watch everyone else play for about 6 hours.
Oh, no.
I'm like, I hate Dungeons & Dragons. That's what I came up with.
That's awful.
Yeah. But there was another game at the same time called Champions, which was a superhero role-playing game. I'm like, I don't want to die, and superheroes don't die, so I'm going to play this game instead.
Nice.
So all through middle school and high school... I ended up playing Champions with this person and a few other people. And I did a lot of GMing because I'm like, you know, someone has to make the world. So that's going to be me. Right. So lots of GMing of like superhero role-playing games. Went to college. Yeah, role-playing and games in general just kind of didn't happen. Other more interesting things were going on.
Right.
Fast forward to about 10 years ago, I picked up the 4th edition Player's Handbook. And 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons, in my mind, fixed everything broken about Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
I'm in the minority about this. I know many people don't think 4th edition is Dungeons & Dragons. Right. I'm like, this is the perfect edition. So really loved 4th edition. Now that 5th edition's out, I think that is really the sweet spot. 5th edition is the ideal thing. But in the meantime, I really liked role-playing games and seeing, you know, what the systems were doing and what was going on. So I'd pick up a lot of different role-playing games, the player's books, and just kind of read through the rules and see what kind of looked good to me. I kept following Champions until it turned into the hero system. I own literally dozens of books on the hero system. Mm-hmm. And I own all of the fourth edition books. I'm looking over at the bookcase.
It's big.
And then I have an entire section of just miscellaneous games that I'm like always kind of checking into and looking at. Mm-hmm. Savage World is the most recent one where I'm like, wow, this game is really cool. So, you know, started up a campaign with that. Right. I'm running, that's my home campaign that Kitty plays in. Mm-hmm. Kind of on hiatus right now, but it will be picked up at some point.
There's a lot of weddings going on in our group.
Yeah, a lot of weekend busyness and things like that. Mm-hmm. And at work, I run a 5th edition D&D game on Tuesday nights. So I can get anywhere from 5 to 10 players on a Tuesday night at work. So I was kind of roped into that. It was not my suggestion. Someone's like, oh, you got to run a game. So nice. I'm like, all right, fine. So that's me in a nutshell, super nutshell. Kitty, what about you?
I started being in the room after we actually moved in with Chris for a while. Me and my husband lived with Chris, and they would play Friday nights, and I would just be there, and I would come out to order food with everyone, but that was about it. And then Catherine moved to China, and so I ended up filling in her spot in the group after that campaign ended, starting a new one, and that was a Pathfinder campaign.
Yep.
That's where I started as a paladin. I really liked being a paladin. I'm a total goody two-shoes. Then we did a 5th Ed campaign.
Yep.
And now we're doing a Savage Worlds Slipstream, which is a very pulpy sci-fi kind of setting, which has been a lot of fun. And I cannot wait to start that up again.
Yep. I have to actually conclude that campaign.
Yeah.
So I can start the next campaign, which will likely be Savage Rifts, I think, is what I'm looking at next.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Google it. It's really cool.
Sounds cool.
And Josh?
Right. Well, I've actually only ever played two sessions of a role-playing game. And this is really recently. So, I've been getting into board games for, a few months before I came to the States and, just going to the meetups and, trying out different things. And, wow, board games have come a long way. And thinking to myself, well, I've, heard a lot about Dungeons and Dragons RPG type games. Why don't I give it a go? And when me and Chris went to Gen Con and Origins, each one of those, I played both of them at Origins, and there was one D&D game. I forget which edition. Can't remember.
Yeah.
Right. It was just an intro that they had a character set up for me. And then there was a kind of indie game that was based off of some engine that I'm not sure about.
I believe from what you've described, it's Dungeon World.
Right. Yeah. But it was like the Night Witches, which is like some World War II all-female squadron. But it was really cool. And just very new, very kind of inquisitive.
Yeah. So, I know why I play role-playing games. I guess you guys don't, so I'll elaborate a little bit.
Right.
I like creating worlds. I like creating stories. I don't like creating stories. Uh-huh. Can kind of get into that whole thing. I don't plan the story ahead of time. I never have an idea of what the players need to do. Mm-hmm. I have a general idea of what's happening in the world and maybe an end goal at some point. But even then, that end goal may just come to me as we're playing the game. I'm much more of like an improv game master.
Right.
I play to explore what the story is. It makes it much more interesting to me.
Right.
Than coming up with a story and then getting frustrated because you guys aren't turning left when you should be turning left.
Right.
And I get the most interesting storylines out of this because, I want to do this, or I think this is a super interesting thing. And all of a sudden, that'll become a basis for the entire game.
Right.
An example of this is probably one of the best examples. I was running the Dark Sun campaign that Kitty's husband was playing in, which was talking about the Friday night game.
Right.
That was a 2-year campaign.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
About a third of the way in, I had needed some filler. Like, I wasn't ready for them to assault the big city yet, because I'm like, I just not ready for that yet. Mm-hmm. And mostly because there wasn't enough time left in the session for me to start that. So they started scouting, and I kind of just improv this cave that they'd walk into. Mm-hmm. And again, I have no idea what's going on. When they walked in the cave, had no idea what was going to be in there.
Right.
So they kept walking, like, oh, and now there's this big, you know, tall plateau, and at the top of it is a glowing something you hear chanting. Again, no idea. Just like, if they go up there, great. They'll find something. If they run away, then who knows what the mystery chanting was. Mm-hmm. So they did go up there. They found these creatures, like, basically chanting around this big sphere and made it completely up. But all of a sudden, by the end of that session, I realized this sphere was one of many that was causing the entire planet to not be able to, like, live. The Dark Sun campaign is a very desert planet. Magic is very dangerous. And this was one of the spheres that was causing that to happen.
Right.
Changing the entire world and their goal at that point. Right. At that, they did not know what that was then, but several sessions later when they found another one, that's when they started putting it together. Mm-hmm. All because of I needed to burn some time and a cave popped out of nowhere.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just improv that out of nowhere, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff I love to do. I do the same thing at work. I don't plan. I don't have enough time to plan all these things. Mm-hmm. So I just sit down and, okay, so you're fighting. Right now what they're doing is they fought a worm. And for some reason, I decided to put 5 torches on the walls. And they were magic torches. Well, they were torches made out of different gemstones. Mm-hmm. For reasons, whatever, I don't know. Really what it was meant for is if you're holding it, then you could be affected. You could affect the worm with that kind of element to it, whatever. Well, suddenly they became integral part of they let a demon get, you know, summoned from the underworld. Mm-hmm. And now these torches are key to killing the dragons because that's what they thought it was. Like, oh, it's got to be something about the torches. Right. Let's bring them back. So now they're talking to a silver dragon. They're sending them to all these different dragons that match the color of the torches so they can turn the torches into magic rods that they can be turned into a magic staff so they can go and kill the demon.
Wow.
That was not planned ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Just some little side thing that's now developed into a core idea of that story.
Exactly.
Wow.
So that's why I played role-playing games, because I love just putting a seed down and seeing how it grows.
Right.
Now, what I'm interested with is Kitty's on the other side of this.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you can tell maybe when I'm making things up as I go along. You can definitely tell when I'm actually trying to play from a module. I don't think I'm nearly as loose if I'm trying to put a story in there. Right. But so, Kitty, what is your perspective on this? You've had 3 campaigns with me so far.
Mm-hmm. I agree that it's very kind of we direct the action. I don't know.
Would you rather have? So our very first campaign was a Pathfinder campaign that I was playing with Kitty. And I was playing going through the Wrath of the Righteousness adventure path, which really is.
Which we did for a whole 2 sessions and then you left, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So we actually got through like half of it. But at a certain point, I'm like, all right, I got to stop.
It wasn't as much fun. You would get frustrated.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you were frustrated at the game or at us or both, but it wasn't as much fun as I think when we kind of direct the action. I think sometimes though we get lost in like the wandering around occasionally. Some of our group can be very focused on details that I'm like, why are we doing this? But overall, it's a fun style of play. I wouldn't be doing this 3 years later if it wasn't fun for me.
Yeah. Well, in the Pathfinder adventure path, they might as well call it an adventure railroad in most cases, because you really are going from this to this to this. And they're very well written. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think they're great references.
Right.
But there's so much information in those books that would never actually get out to the player.
Right.
That it's really hard as a DM to prep for that game, because I would have to read through everything, try to understand everything that's going on. And then as soon as the players wanted to do something a little bit different, like, okay, well, let me look this up real quick to make sure I'm not going to change something that's going to break this later on down the path.
And there's a lot of, hold on a second, let me, hold on, like running to the other room, grabbing a different book, pulling something up on the iPad.
Yeah, well, and part of that was just Pathfinder is an impossible game. No offense to people who like Pathfinder, but it is just the clunkiest game in the world to run. Mm-hmm. I've run a lot of role-playing games. I've never run anything more clunky.
Right.
And I say that because there's so much cross-referencing. You look at a particular monster and mm-hmm. it references five other books to know mm-hmm. what this monster does.
Right.
It's hard to run. But when you're running an adventure path too, you have to make sure you're not breaking the game. Where if I'm doing my own thing, I can just improv whatever I need to do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if the system, the story, or the fact that 5th edition came out in the middle of our campaign cut it short, but I do remember.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, so we have an option. We can continue to play Pathfinder and go through this adventure path, or we can switch to 5th edition that just released. What do you guys want to do? And it was unanimous. Mm-hmm. Let's switch. Let's stop playing this game. So
what were the real problems there? Because it sounds like, I'll just summarize what I think I heard, that it was a kind of, the story was kind of on rails and it referenced all these different things you had to keep looking up and you couldn't have that flexibility. I mean, did it go as far as feeling like a choose your own adventure, but just someone's reading out for you, or is it not that strict? I mean, I'm just trying to get an idea.
So actually that leads to a really good point. So for this, what we really want to try to do is kind of compare role-playing games with board games in a sense, right? To try to get people who have never played role-playing games to understand what they are.
Right.
And I think that's the quintessential question. Like, is a role-playing game a choose-your-own-adventure? If it is, why, you know, read a choose-your-own-adventure book?
Right.
It isn't. Mm-hmm. However, when you're playing, there's multiple ways to play a role-playing game. So I just talked about the improvised version and the module version. What is the difference there? When you're looking at a module, it's almost less than choose your own adventure.
Hang on. You might have to briefly explain the module.
What a module is.
Yeah.
A module is actually an old word for adventure. It's basically an adventure.
A predefined story?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. It's like a pre-written. The game master he has the whole adventure laid out in front of him, and he is walking his players through it rather than an improv game where the game master's making the story for the players.
And so how is that different from a choose your own adventure, that module style?
So the choose your own adventure is like, well, you have option A and option B.
Right.
And you know out of the gate you have option A or option B.
Right.
But when you're running an adventure, players aren't supposed to know they have an option A or an option B.
Right.
They're supposed to feel like they can do whatever they want.
Right.
But really the adventure says, no, you just have option A.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you choose, you're going to go down
option A. You're going to go down option A. Option B is a lie.
Yes. Option B is a lie.
So we're specifically talking about modules here. That seems to be the case. Like, you're given the illusion that you can do anything, but actually you can't.
Now, sometimes no matter how valiantly you fight, you're going to have to get captured to get the kind of explanation of story there.
Right.
There's always, all right, so we battled and now this is always what was going to happen at the end of this scene.
So and there are different, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of different adventures that are written in different ways. So the path is here. Part A is going to happen. Part B is going to happen. It's actually written in 6 parts for the adventure path.
Right.
And a lot of adventures are written in that way. I run a lot of organized play adventures, which are 4-hour adventures.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, they're very much this, this, and this.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
However, a lot of the writers understanding they don't want to put the players on rails will try to do something that's a little bit more sandboxy.
Mm-hmm.
And a sandbox is, here's a world, go play in it wherever you want.
Right.
Those are very difficult as a GM to prep, because now you're prepping all of these different things that could happen, even though only a few of them are going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it might be very difficult. It's just more time consuming to do.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've taken away the rails, which is helpful for the game master, dungeon master. We say dungeon master for Dungeons & Dragons, game master for just about everything else.
Right.
But you've taken the ease of running a rails for the dungeon master away, and you still have to keep up with all of the different characters and stuff that are going on.
Right.
So I'll run some games and just, it'll be an organized play game. I'm like, all right, I've only had 3 minutes to prepare for this. Mm-hmm. I have the general gist. If you've played this module before, because some people do, this is not going to be the same thing you played before.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm curious about from you, Josh, is you've played twice.
Yep.
Was the role-playing game what you expected it to be? Like, what did you go in expecting, and what did you experience it as?
Yeah, I mean, I had a vague sense that there were going to be, like, some hit points and some stats to my character, and that those were going to make a difference as to what I might, on certain different things I might try and do in the game. So I had this vague idea that I could do certain things and that these stats might help me do them. The story part of it, I had a sense that, you know, I wasn't sure where it felt because before playing, where it fell, because before playing, I had spoken to you about role-playing games. You asked you a bunch of questions and I started to get the sense that role-playing games could be a lot more improvisational, like you run them. And so I was kind of a bit in the middle. I was like, well, some of these games are going to be kind of on the rails and some of them are going to be improvised. So I don't know what type I'm going to get. And maybe it will depend on the person who's running it and the other people who I'm playing with. I don't know. So I kind of had an idea that there were these two different directions you could take things in, and one being very prescribed and having a story all in this book and we're going to follow it exactly, and then also having how much flexibility we're going to have. Maybe this is a really improv style type of game. So I had those two things there and I didn't know where exactly it was going to fall. I felt like Dungeons and Dragons, I assumed, was going to be more prescriptive. I think it ended up being a bit more flexible with the people we were playing with, but the actual game master seemed to want to stick fairly close to what was prescribed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that at a lot of conventions, if you play your first role-playing game at a convention, they're playing through a story. They're playing through an adventure. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to stick close to that adventure, that story, because they have everything written down. And it is a relatively short time frame, so you don't have a lot of time to go all over the place. But you mentioned one thing that I think is really important to know that's different between a board game and a role-playing game.
Right.
There's many, many differences. But something to highlight, a board game, you play a game of Risk, for example.
Right.
When you sit down, you know what to expect from that game. There is a strict set of rules, and you're going to play against with those rules. If somebody is not playing with, you know, the right rules, you're saying either A, they don't know the rules, or B, they're trying to cheat, or whatever the case is. With a role-playing game, though, you don't necessarily... You sit down with a rule book, but the feel of that game is going to be drastically different based on who you sat down with.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but how they need to run the game. Is it a convention style where they have to run you through a specific story, or is it an improv style where they can pretty much throw anything out there?
Yeah.
So I've witnessed people sit down and play a role-playing game with what I would consider a bad DM. Right. And just, I would say, if I played in that game, I'd never play again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thief with 4 hit points getting his head cut off at the very beginning.
Yep.
Is the perfect example.
And I know a lot of people who die at the first session, first game they ever play, and they never play again.
Yep.
Right. Because the story's over for you.
Mm-hmm.
You're just sitting there watching it.
Almost like we were talking about the elimination style games. It's no fun to be on the outside.
Yep. Right.
So I think it really, the DM has to be the person that makes sure everyone at the table is having fun.
Right.
And what I would consider a bad DM is someone who thinks the players are playing in their game.
Right.
As opposed to someone who feels like you're creating a game with everyone at the table.
Right.
Like those are the big differences with me. But going back to the mechanics of a role-playing game, like either of you, what do you think, when you first started playing, what did you feel about the mechanics of the game? Is it a game? You know, people ask me all the time, it's like, well, who won at Dungeons and Dragons? Like, well, nobody wins. But if nobody wins, is it a game?
Right.
Like, what do you guys think?
I mean, it's like a co-op game is the closest thing I could really think of. Is like you are beating the board or the game master, dungeon master, sort of. And you all work together to do it. There's always kind of a team of different kinds of characters where you've got, you know, your paladins, fighters, you've got thieves, you have wizards. You can go on and on, bards forever.
And that's just in the fantasy games.
Yeah. In our current game, I'm a pilot and I do all the piloting things.
I mean, there seems to be like more in terms of is this a game? I completely agree. In those aspects are similar to a game, but then you've also got you know, the flexibility aspects where you say, well, like you said, Chris, there's a rigid set of rules in a game like Risk, whereas this does feel more improvisational. And, you know, I got role-playing games described to me as it's story time by someone. And I was like, oh, okay. And that was a very good in a nutshell way for me to think about the game and get me interested in the game. Because from a non-role-playing perspective, you know, you hear about these people with stats and characters and you're like, oh, am I going to have to like number crunch? Is this going to be difficult for me to even like get going with this set of rules or whatever it is? But if you just say it's story time, it's like, oh, okay. So maybe I don't need to know all the rules and I can just sit, you know, come and join and contribute to the story. Again, it's going to depend on the kind of people you sit down with, the kind of game you're playing, the kind of dungeon master you have as to how much flexibility and how much story creation you're doing as a participant. But there always seems to be some level of flexibility there. I remember when I had my very first game, you know, that we were fighting these big icicle monsters and someone whispered to the person fighting it, like, you should just lick it. And then the guy just like licks the icicle and everyone's like falling about laughing, like, oh my God, did he really do that? Gets stuck to the icicle and, you know, screams out snow cones for everyone and just like stabs it to pieces. And, you know, that was really like cool moment where I was just like, wow, you know, that just totally went off the wall. That didn't feel like what I was expecting. So I enjoyed those moments and I can't see that happening as often in board games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think role-playing games really tend to pull out the memories. Like for me, when I'm behind the curtain, I know what's going on. Everything that happens on the table is because I put it there, except for what the players do.
Mm-hmm.
But I've still set up the scene. So for me, I don't get that magic so much until the players start talking about games that we've done as if it really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, licking the icicle and snow cones and stuff. A group I do organize play at Cat and Mouse Game Store in Chicago.
Right.
And early on with the group that, you know, continually comes back, they came into a goblin hideout and there was like an arrow slit so that the goblins could like look out for.
Right.
And they looked through this arrow slit and they saw that there were goblins over there and they saw a stack of hay. And one of them decided that, hey, I'm going to use Minor Illusion to put a baby on the top of the hay as bait for the goblins.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that the goblins will come over and want to eat the baby.
Right.
And then when they
goblins love babies.
They love babies. They taste, they're very tasty. And when they do, we're going to shoot them with arrows through the hole. And they won't know because they'll get surprised. So they ended up luring over. I made some rolls and goblins. I rolled very terribly. And the goblins came over just like, oh, look, baby. And they just started killing the goblins from the other side a safe distance away. From my perspective, it's like, there's not even a combat here. It was like, whatever, this is whatever, big deal. It's a minor combat. It's not breaking anything to let it happen like this.
Right.
From their perspective, they now refer to that arrow slit as the murder hole.
Right.
And it comes up in almost every single session as like a way of getting around things. It's like, well, we could just work out a way to make the murder hole work again.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that is a memory that just stuck with the entire group.
Right.
And you just don't get that from board games. When you play a board game, it's fun. It's like, don't get me wrong. We're doing a podcast on it. We love board games.
Mm-hmm.
But you tend not to take the memories of a board game and carry it forward and tell other people about this one time when I was playing Risk, this happened.
Right.
Sometimes it happens, but not as often.
Well, it leads me into one of my favorite things about role-playing games, which is character creation. You get super attached when you make a character.
Right.
And you spend time with that character, giving them personality, building them, and having them interact with the other team characters.
And imagine adopting that personality yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
In a way, depending on your style of play.
Right.
I'm less of a actually get into the role kind of person, but some of our group can get very like, I am my character.
Right, yeah.
I consider it first person versus third person playing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are put off by role-playing games because they feel like they have to act something, or if they have to pretend.
Right.
Like, I don't want to pretend I'm doing these things.
Right.
It's like, you don't really have to pretend. You can be completely third person and describe. And I think there's a distinct difference between that.
Yeah. And I think it helps. Sometimes I think about it almost like a video game where you are controlling the character. You have a controller.
Right.
But it's just your imagination.
Yeah.
And you can say, like, Reyna was my paladin. Reyna's going to walk in the room and do this. Reyna's going to hit this guy with her sword. Right. So I'm very much a third person player. But I'd say Rob in our group is very much he is his character. Right. He'll do voices and everything. Yeah. He is very into it. But I don't think that like our styles of play conflict with each other either, right. I think. And it doesn't bother either of us the way that we play.
Yeah. Well, that's great that it has that flexibility. You know, mm-hmm. you can incorporate people who want to do it both ways.
Mm-hmm. I'll slip in and out of first and third person quite frequently. Like, the bartender tells you that, you know, it's going to cost you 2 silver for the thing. And also the barmaid over there has the information you need. And then someone will ask a question as if they were asking the bartender, and I may come back like, well, I don't know. I've only known her for a few weeks, so she's kind of friendly to me, but she does seems a little offish to other people. You know, and just kind of go in and out of that.
Sure.
Really respond to how the players are treating it, too.
Exactly. If they really are like it, great. If they don't, then you can easily back out of it and be like,
If Chris starts doing the voices and I pretend to melt in my chair, just like,
She's the worst player ever.
I am.
But no. But I mean, that not intimidating new players and the thing, look, it's fine just to describe what your character does.
Yeah.
It is hard, though, because, like I said, I really enjoy making my own character. But that can be a big hurdle for people starting a new game. It's like, oh, yeah, we're going to play this really fun game. Here's 45 minutes at least of homework for you to do before we can start doing the fun part.
Yep.
So I like a lot of convention games, a lot of first-time games, you'll play a pre-made character.
Yeah.
But it's not as much fun.
I was going to say, often is there that option for a pre-made character in these types of games?
Oftentimes, if you're going to go to a convention or an organized play at a game store or something like that, they will almost always have pre-made characters for you.
Right.
These days, the internet has an endless number of characters that whoever is running the game master or dungeon master, can download and have available.
Right.
So even if I'm doing, like, we joke about this, but when I switched over to Savage Worlds, I'm like, all right, we're going to make characters, but we're just going to throw them away at the end. So we're just going to make the characters so we can learn the system. Because I was learning the system. We were all learning the system at the same time.
Right.
So we all made the characters. We went through maybe an hour and a half, 2 hour scenario. And then, of course, those characters never got thrown away. They became the characters.
We get attached to our characters very, very, very quickly.
When we did the 5th edition transition. Yeah, we did the same thing. It's like, all right, we'll make characters, we'll learn 5th edition, and then we'll throw those away and start over. Right. Like, no, they never got thrown away.
I'm still mad that I ordered my custom mini, and then you're like, oh, and now we're going to start something new, and I never got to use my custom mini.
Well, that was all a ploy because the custom mini sword broke off, and I felt...
Yeah, because you broke my custom mini.
Wait. I'm a total noob. What's a custom mini?
Oh, so another one of my favorite parts about role-playing games is... one style of play is having a grid on the table where you move your characters around the grid. So you can see the combat. So a lot of times, like, you'll get flanking advantages based on where you're standing, that kind of thing. So you need to see where you are.
Right.
And you can have a miniature version of your character that you can paint yourself and add little personal touches.
That's cool.
And as somebody who's crazy into crafting and really detailed work, I love it.
Yep.
Nice. So there is a, is it Hero Forge?
Hero Forge
is a website where you can go and they will 3D print a custom mini for you. You can pick everything from like height and build, hairstyles and clothes.
Weapons and armor.
Yeah. Wow. So I spent way too much time fussing around on that one. That is a fun website to play with. I highly recommend it. And I made my character exactly what I thought she would look like. And I never even got to paint her before we started in on Savage Worlds.
So for your birthday, I will give you a certificate for Hero Forge. Because now they have black plastic, which is more sturdy. Mm-hmm. It doesn't break as much. And they have steel. So a couple of the people at work have gotten their miniatures. And one of them came in with a steel miniature.
Fancy.
We played on Friday, actually. So just a few days ago. And it's really cool. It's like clinks when you put it on the table type of thing. Right. Depending on the material, the detail can be lesser or greater. The material that Kitty got was a very, very detailed material, but it was very brittle plastic.
Right.
And it didn't take much. It basically fell about an inch and a half and the sword broke off. So I owe her a miniature.
Well, even my first miniature I did, her hand would never stay on, ever.
So sometimes miniatures, you can get, you don't have to get custom miniatures. You can get, you know, pre-made miniatures. Sometimes they come in multiple parts and you have to assemble them.
Right.
Those are a pain.
Yeah, I imagine.
So this was a horseback mounted miniature holding a huge flag. And that flag was a separate piece that just...
We might have to add that as an image for this episode.
Yeah, because it's just like...
The it's like a tiny, tiny little wrist that's supposed to sit together. The tiniest connection point. Yeah.
But it's an interesting point because it's, you know, one of the aspects I think people are drawn to is making their avatar, you know, their character. And like we were talking about, you are either inhabiting that character if you, your style is to be the character, or you are, you feel like, you know, you're in charge, like in a computer game where I'm going to send them around and decide everything they do. And this is making it even more concrete to people to have an option to kind of have the actual physical avatar and, like you say, customize it, craft it if you wanted to. And even just character creation in itself is the whole like creating that avatar that's going to go through this world.
Yeah, well, we talked about, I talked briefly about 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons. One of the big complaints about it is it felt like a video game.
Right.
And it was always, you had to have a map. Right. And so it was always miniature combat, and you, it was, it felt kind of a combination between a video game as far as how characters progressed and a board game as far as how combat played out.
Right.
So, and all of your cards said, okay, you can, you know, move 6 spaces or slide 4 spaces. And slide is just a special term for movement where you don't get opportunity attacks or something like that. So it was set up in such a way where the rules were written as if it were a board game. In fact, a game that we should play is the Dungeons & Dragons Adventure system is based heavily on the 4th edition Dungeons & Dragons rules. Mm-hmm. You just don't need a Dungeon Master. It's a cooperative game that you fight against the board on. And one of the drawbacks to that is what Josh was talking about earlier was the story. It feels like you can't put as much story into combat if you're set by, have these strict rules.
Right.
Whereas for new players, having strict rules is sometimes a more comfortable segue into role-playing than saying, you can do whatever you want. I have a player at the game store right now, and you know she's playing with her son, and they're both learning how to play this.
Right.
And she's like, well, what can I do? I'm like, well, you can do whatever you want. You're in combat. There's orcs attacking you. You have a bow and a sword. You can do whatever you want. But she's like, well, I guess I shoot? And I'm like, sure, okay. And then the next turn, she doesn't want to shoot. She's like, I guess I just have to shoot again, right? And I'm like, well, you can do anything. It's like, well, what do you mean? What? Give me an example. Like, well, I don't know. If you want to jump up, jump on the back of the orc's head and try to cover his eyes or whatever the case is, you can do that. But when you first start playing a role-playing game, these concepts are kind of foreign to you. It's not something you're comfortable doing.
Right.
I think I had an interesting experience because I watched a lot of role-playing before I was part of it. My husband has been playing role-playing games since he was like 14.
Right.
And I've known him since he was 17. So I've seen him play for a long, 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 long time. It took him a long time to get me to join a game.
Right.
It really only happened because it was happening in our house. Yeah. I couldn't escape. But being able to watch other players, see how they did things, see how the games worked, really let me know. Like for the first game, I didn't feel completely lost like that.
Right.
Because it is really hard there is no card in front of you. Like, on your turn, you can do these five things.
Right.
But, you know, there are kind of like five things that you can sort of do on every turn that, you know, it's never really a mistake to do some of these things.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And actually, I think we're seeing a lot of actual play in, like, for on YouTube and even actual play podcasts. Actual play being you're listening to a group of people play a role-playing game. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, they're oftentimes edited, you know, heavily with music and sound effects and whatever the case is, depending on the quality. And sometimes they may or may not follow the rules as they're supposed to be written or whatever. But what it does demonstrate is how to play a role-playing game. How mm-hmm. to sit there, sit around a table with your friends, making things up, laughing, having a good time.
Mm-hmm.
If you're playing a role-playing game and you're not laughing, then something's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Now, there's even a horror role-playing game, you need to have the laughter to make the horrorific stuff feel right. You know, mm-hmm. there's that comedy relief thing. It's really just a good time to sit around the table and have some fun.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And some people is like, I will never play role-playing games. It's just in their mindset that it's just not their thing. I can only think of one person in my entire life that's ever sat down at a game at my table and left saying, no, I don't want to do that again.
Mm-hmm. Just because you're so damn good, Chris.
well, it's not necessarily me. It's the group of people.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. everyone, it's when, oh, you should lick the ice cube.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
kind of thing.
Right. But uh-huh. that's what I'm interested in is like, you know, for someone or for people who don't really know about what is it that attracts people to these games or this thing that we call role-playing game, you know, what are the core elements that draw people into it? Is it different for lots of different people, or is there, you know, a set of core things you can say, well, there's these things that really get people gripped into it?
Well, since we're running short on time, this is a great question to wrap up. So let's each answer this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna go last.
Sure.
Since you asked the question, Josh, yeah. we'll have Kitty go first.
So I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
So it's trying to identify the core things that you think, you know, people will get out of a role-playing game or gets people sucked in or what mm-hmm. they really so, enjoy like, about
what draws you in.
Yeah. What draws you in? Honestly, I think it's the interaction with the other people,
yeah.
the people at the table, and the cooperation, working together, and being able to kind of step outside of yourself, be a part of a different story, kind of literal escapism, like
yeah.
just
yeah.
be something else for a little while.
Yeah.
yeah.
And it can be a really, really good time if you've got the right group of people.
Right.
I think that's why I was very hesitant to start for a long time, was that I felt like I didn't fit in with some of the other groups, that
yeah.
you really have to find the right people to play with.
Right, yeah,
that's
yeah.
true. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, I agree with a lot of what you said. It's I really like the kind of acting stuff. It's the kind of thing I do in my spare time, and I really enjoy that improvisation element. Mm-hmm. And I think there's an element of mystery there as well. With a computer game, you know, what it's kind of, you're seeing it all visually, so mm-hmm. it's there in front of you. With this kind of thing, like Chris was saying, you're making it up as you go along, and it's story time, and you don't know what's going to be at the other side of mm-hmm. that door. You don't even know what it's going to even look like, and it could be something wildly different, you know, depending on who decides what's going to be the next room. It might not even be a room. You open the door, it's a forest.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think you get that with even video games, because it's all you're already mindset with the visuals and the backdrop and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, improvisation and kind of mystery for me are the yeah. two big ones.
Yeah, for me, I like setting up a scenario that makes people have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or allows people to have fun. I always, to be completely honest, it's sometimes exhausting to say, oh no, I have to go run a game for 3 hours, 4 hours, six right. hours, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always something I'm excited to go to.
Yeah.
But once I've started it, everything else in my life doesn't exist anymore.
Right,
it's yeah. gone. And mm-hmm. the only thing that pays any attention, or like the only thing that matters at all yeah. is what's at the table.
Right.
And, you know, Kitty mentioned escapism. It's kind of like that.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not like I'm delusional or anything like
yeah,
that.
Sure.
We're not talking 80s Dungeons and Dragons paranoia or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's when you're there, you're in the moment.
Right.
And you're not worried about any other stress of the world.
Yeah.
And being in the moment, I think, is the that is the key to any role-playing game.
Right.
If you can get lost in the moment, you've made it. Right. You've done it. So I honestly could talk about role-playing games for hours and hours and endless hours.
It's a really big topic for 1 hour. Yeah. And if you are not an experienced role-player, I have no idea if we did anything to help you understand role-playing games.
Yes.
Sorry.
So I will recommend a couple podcasts that I listen to on a regular basis. For Gaming and BS is one of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah.
They're the reason I'm going to Gamehole Con. They're the who I'm running the game for that I'm running there.
Sure.
Brett and Sean, they very conversational. Our show is kind of loosely based off of their format.
Yeah.
But they do a great job. And really each week they cover a different topic in role-playing games.
Right.
And a lot of it is from the Dungeon Master perspective or Game Master perspective.
Yeah.
Much of it is also, you know, from a player side, what they feel they like or don't like.
Sure.
I want to do, we'll do periodic role playing as well, like tabletop game talk that includes role playing games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we'll get into some more topics too. So if anyone has any questions, like, hey, you know, what is it, you know, what do you think about this particular thing? Or I heard about this game called Dungeon World and I was wondering, you know, this, or tell us about a bad experience or something. It's like, and you know, or actually we really want to hear about good experiences, but any experience you might have had that can help new players that maybe have been playing board games for a while and thinking about, should I do a role playing game, how to make that transition.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be, again, I could talk on this stuff for hours.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm hitting record. So I think that's about it for this episode.
Absolutely.
So Josh, why don't you take us out?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So email us with comments or questions to tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blonde. Chris is at Game Master Chris. And Kitty is at Kitten L. And of course, you can leave a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on at Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we talk about social games, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.